My audio working?
Yeah, it is. Is mine?
Yes, it is. Sounds perfect.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a busy, busy week. And how are you?
I am on fire.
Oh, I love that.
Just on fire. So, when was the last time we talked to each other?
I think it was a week ago. Exactly a week ago. Right at this time.
I feel like we're friends now.
Yes, we are. Definitely. I've talked more to you than quite a few people I quote-unquote call friends.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. That's normally what happens, right? So why was your week so busy?
Well, right now I'm juggling quite a few things. I have, of course, university, but I'm also running a hackathon called Starter Hacks, and I'm also working a part-time job. I'm a videographer for a creative agency. So there's a lot of things that I have got going on right now, and it's quite exciting.
Khalil, what is your course load like?
It's very light compared to an engineer's or a math student's course load. We take the exact number of credits in classes, and right. I think it's almost the same amount of hours. But in terms of the deliverables and the requirements, the Global Business Digital Arts course load is very, very light.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short though. What is that? What does it mean though? Right. In other words, like, what are your courses this semester? You're a sophomore, right?
Yes, I am. Second
so
year,
what yep. are your courses this semester? And then I want to talk a little bit about, so you're working for a digital creative agency, right? And you also seem to have a team of your own, and you've got a pretty impressive setup in your, what looks like your dorm room, yeah?
Yeah.
So what kind of courses are you taking?
Right now, I'm taking two core courses. They're Global Business Digital Arts courses. So one of them is actually film. And it's just the basics of filmmaking, which I'm lucky to have kind of gotten this term because it's a little bit smoother for me. It's not much of a learning curve. And then I'm taking another one, which is digital arts culture. And it's kind of like a history course of the evolution of analog to digital. That one is really fun. Computer science is another thing I'm taking. So I'm learning how to code, which is fun. It's a little bit more daunting. That's one of the courses that I've had that's taken up most of my study time.
I can imagine.
And I'm learning French as well. And I'm taking, let me try to remember. I'm taking another business course. So
okay, but that's five different courses this semester, yeah?
Yes, that is five courses this semester. And it's the standard course load for all University of Waterloo students. We take five courses that for the term.
How does that work? So when I was in school, right, I took Japanese every day. So 8 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock in the morning every day. And then I probably had one or two other courses every day. But you have five. I had four. Is it every day five classes or?
No, it's not actually. So we do blocks basically where if the schedule fits into your calendar, they slot you in for that time slot. And my time slot is 9 to 5 every day. I have two or three of my subjects, and then I only have classes from Monday to Wednesday. So Thursday and Friday are completely free. I don't do anything those days besides work. So those are the days that I've filled up for my part-time, which is why I said part-time.
Got it. So tell me a little bit more about this part-time job that you have.
I work at this creative agency called Now Creative Group. They're based in Toronto, and we do a lot of different things. So they're all pretty much social media related. We do social media management, marketing content, and video photo services. And that's my end of the stick. It's the video and photo services that we do for clients.
So give me an example of something that you're working on or you've worked on or you want to work on.
Right now, I'm the creative guy. So all I do is the actual execution of the task. So say, for example, Viral Arcade, one of our clients, they wanted us to create a promotional video, which is 2 minutes long, exactly like a commercial, but it's not going on TV. It's going on social media to be promoted. They gave me the task of brainstorming, storyboarding, filming, and then editing. So I got from beginning to end pretty much full reign. Most projects that we do, I get like 75 to 80% of the control in terms of the output that I get to produce, which is exactly what I want to do, because most of the time for other videographers that I know of, they're fed a concept and they're left upset because, you know, these guys are creatives. They have their own visions for things. But when a company comes in and asks them, I want you to make this, specifically this, and there's no room for changes, it really coops up their creativity. They just become robots at the end of the day. So I'm in a very happy spot.
I was going to say, what's the point of being in a creative role if it takes away the creativity? All you are now is in a role.
That's the sad bit, because a lot of people are turned into these manufacturing robots where instead of it being creative, it's an input-output position. And that is the saddest thing. And it's a harsh reality that a lot of videographers have to face. Even weddings. Weddings I used to do in the weekends just for a little bit of extra cash. And I learned quite a bit. However, after a while, it just became such a massive pattern because it's just the same thing over and over again. Weddings became such a chore, and it wasn't fun anymore because it's just the same thing over and over again. Toasts, ceremony, everything.
Yeah, I mean, weddings in general can get pretty boring to begin with. But if you're just doing them every weekend or every other weekend, and if you're filming them, it can get really monotonous. So I can guess. Yep. Yucky. So what are the types of things you really want to work on, right? So I noticed that you have a pretty good setup in your room as well, right? And a lot of the people that I podcast with don't have the same level of equipment that you do. What's the reason for having all that stuff at home?
I love to network. And if it were up to me, I would put all of these different things that I like together. So there's the business entrepreneurship aspect of things that I absolutely love. There's the creative side of things that I absolutely love. And there's the networking portion of this whole business that I adore so much. Opportunities like this where I get to talk to somebody across the world who's interested in pretty much a lot of the things that I'm interested in. That's I have this setup because this lets me do that specifically. And what is it like having all this? It's great because the quality of content that I get to produce is pretty high.
But what does that mean, right? So how much time do you actually get to spend when you're done doing your coursework and you're done doing your part-time job? How much time do you get to spend sitting at your rig and networking with people, creating business with other people, and just producing content? Can you tell me more about that content production side of what you're doing? That's not related to your part-time job, yeah?
Yeah, no, it's not. My part-time job gives me opportunities to learn certain things, and then I apply that to my personal things. So I like to separate my content into tailored content, which is for different platforms like LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. And then there's also the other content that I produce, which is like things that I trickle in every now and then when I get a spurt or an idea randomly. I'll just be like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let's plop the camera down and say something to it. Those are the unplanned things. And for the planned things that I do, I have to schedule those explicitly and I don't have a lot of time to do it. So it's like a once a week endeavor. I have a show called What's Up Waterloo where I feature the cool people that I get to meet from networking. So you see where I'm going with this. I get to network with people outside of work. And then when I meet them, I'm like, dude, you are so cool. Please come on to my show. You reflect the Waterloo vibe completely. They come on. I get to create curated content that I get to script, talk to other people about, you know, get feedback from. And it's a larger production than I usually do with my smaller bits of content.
Is that video that you're doing?
Yes, it's video and a podcast as well.
Right, but how do you get them on the video? In other words, you can't have them come back to your dorm room, I'm guessing, and set up a 3-camera rig there and have them do video there. Or maybe you can, but otherwise, how do you get them on the video?
That's what I do, actually. Most of the people I interview are students, and they have plenty of time to do these kinds of things. And these are like the people who are just about to boom into the industry, and they're the fish who haven't been caught yet. And I'm just like, I'm just ready, waiting to grab them and put them onto my show right before they hit it big.
Yeah.
So that's what I do. I bring them back to my dorm room. I set up three cameras. I put the mic on, and I ask them questions in person, coffee table style.
How long is that filming, right? In other words, how long does it take to film, and how much content do you end up with kind of on average?
We've had one episode run for 2 hours, and we've had another episode run for 30 minutes. And that's because of my inexperience, and also just how interesting my guests are on the show. It's just so lovely to get into a conversation with them that when I hit record, they forget about the camera and they forget exactly. about the microphone.
Exactly.
And it just becomes a real conversation. And that runs on for so long.
Right. So when you meet somebody through your networking or through your biz dev, or if they just hear about your What's Up Waterloo show, how can you tell? Or what kind of tactics do you use to figure out if someone's actually going to be talkative, for lack of a better word, right? In other words, you don't want someone to come in and if you say, like, where are you from? And they just say, Boston. You know what I mean? It's so boring. It's non-compelling content. But how do you figure it out?
It's a fear, actually, of mine that sure is. Somebody's going to come on, and I've been lucky enough. Every single show so far has not, that's not happened. But how I do it, how I vet basically my guests is I actually have to have a conversation with them beforehand, and they can't know that they're going to be the next guest on my show. I have to sit down with them just as me and that person, and I have to have a genuine conversation with them prior. Okay. And if it doesn't fly, if it just feels lackluster, then I just won't bring it up in the first place.
Right. So you do this in a way that's very different than what I do, and I'll tell you the difference. I like to maintain spontaneity, right? So you talked about planned content and unplanned content. Now, for you, yep. it's slightly different because you can't essentially pull somebody back to your dorm room, turn on some cameras, and create like an instantaneous video situation. No one's going to do that. Audio is slightly easier. But even if you convince them to come back and say, look, we're going to record this stuff, you, in a way, need to get people comfortable, right? And very rarely, I have done 100, 200 pieces of content this year. And mostly before I record, I won't actually even talk to the person. You saw what I typed to you on Skype, right, this morning. And I just yep. write, you want to just jump right in? I'd say like 95% of the people that I record with are just comfortable just starting. But for you, it's different, right?
Yeah. It's different because of the pressure of the camera.
Yeah.
And I understand that, and I understand that when you're looking through a lens, there's this window of fear that you have to pass through. And
even though nobody's there, right? It's just a camera.
Even though nobody's there, the camera is such a scary thing to be in front of, because even if there are no eyes in the place that you're in, the potential of the amount of viewership that you can get is crazy. And for people to meticulously look at you and to see your motions, and they can replay that over and over again. It's a scary thing to have to be under for an hour long, and I need to make sure that they're comfortable with that. The reason why I don't go full on to a podcast and just a podcast is because of my love, my personal love for video content.
Right. So if you do a 30-minute video, or let's say an hour-long video with somebody, how much content do you end up with on average from an hour-long recording session?
I end up with one really long video, one really short video, like a 2 or 3 minute snippet, a trailer. Snippet, yeah. And then I end up with one podcast and a bunch of different clips and quotes that I can post onto my channel.
And how long does it take you to create that amount of content just for the one session?
A day or two of work, so about 8 to 16 hours.
It does, though, right?
Yeah, it does take quite a bit of time, but it's something that I love, so it's not something I have to motivate myself to do.
Can you talk to me about tools a little bit? I'm really interested in the tools that people use to do this, right? So, and just the setup, just walk me through exactly. I want in detail, like what kind of cameras to use, what kind of tripods, what kind of microphones, how you hooked, are they wireless or not wireless? I really want to understand the setup and then the software that you use.
That's fine. I love nerding out about this.
Yeah, so do I. I want to get really nerdy about this.
when I was in 10th grade, I asked my parents for a microphone for Christmas, and they went all out and got me this Audio Technica AT2020 XLR phantom powered mic.
An XLR, okay.
It's an XLR condenser, so it's one of the things that you'll see in a studio. It's not a premier brand or a premier product, but the quality of it is just so amazing that I've not replaced it since.
Yeah.
And I have a boom arm that I bought off of Amazon for $20 that's been so reliable for the past year. It's a cheapo off-brand boom arm that I can just stretch out on my table. My mic is hooked up to this Behringer USB interface. It's a very, very simple setup. It has two major components, the mic and the USB interface that plugs into my PC.
Right.
And if I was to calculate now how much this costs, I think it's about $200. And that's like a little bit more than the entry level to get into the podcasting biz, which is like you get a Blue Yeti, which is about $130 US, if I'm not mistaken.
$129.99 or something stupid like that. But yeah.
Basically. And you plug it into your PC through USB, and there you go. That's your mobile podcasting setup. I've got a little bit higher, but either way. Content is king, and as long as I sound crisp to myself, I'm fine.
Right. The sound is really important. And to be fair, the sound that I'm getting from you from this recording and from the last recording we did is actually pristine. It's really good.
I listened over the last podcast, and I was extremely happy about it too. I was just like, oh man, that is great.
It is good, yeah. And what kind of cameras do you use?
That's the one that I'm more particular about. I'm very particular about investing in my cameras. So I have a Sony a7 S2, which is currently for videographers, I would say that it's the go-to for professionals. Like, it's like the barrier to entry for real professional work, industry work, because the camera quality is way up there. You get to shoot 4K, gorgeous full frame images, and it's just perfect for video work. There are other industry workhorses like the Panasonic GH5 and other cinema cameras, but this one is my go-to because it can see in the dark. You can shoot in like literally outside by a lamppost at midnight, and you'll still get a very, very good image out of it.
Wow.
That's why I use it. And I've stuck with it for about a year now, and I rent out multiples of the same camera when I need to.
Oh, so you rent them? That's what I was gonna say. So you rent them, right? Because three cameras, once you start getting into video, the equipment costs can start getting a little bit expensive, right? I won't say prohibitive, but it can get expensive. So when you bring somebody back to the dorm room, you're renting other equipment.
My program has its own rental office where I can rent things for free. So it's basically a borrow. I can borrow like all of these top tier cameras. They have cameras better than what I own, nice. Like the A7 III, the newest one. And I just pop in, say hi, tell them, give them my ID and ask them for it. And I've become friends with the rental guys at my university, and we just love talking to each other about this nerdy stuff, and they let me go a little bit beyond what most people are allowed to rent. So it helps to build relationships with the staff.
It sure does, doesn't it? Like, this is part of the biz dev and networking power of being in the media business, right? In a way, the sort of catch-all phrase that I like to use is everybody likes to be on TV, right? Even though it's hard. And I guess the other question I'd ask you is, now do you have a much deeper appreciation for the people that are on television every single day, sitting in front of a live camera, knowing that there are millions of people watching and listening to them every day? Like, when you watch it as a kid, you just think, oh, that's an easy job. All you do is sit there and talk. It's not that easy.
Oh, my
right?
goodness. I tell this to people all the time. I have a friend who keeps pointing out these flaws whenever we watch shows together, and she always calls out people for these minor gestures that are so annoying.
Right.
She calls it her pet peeve, and I'm just like, well, dude, you know that that job is so tough to be on the camera for that long over and over again. I would cut them some slack because these guys facing a monumental amount of pressure to be under the cameras 24/7, essentially. Yeah. I have massive respect for actors, people on set, massive respect.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that is really clear to me is that every time you podcast, every time you create a video blog, or just every time you record yourself, it's permanent. And particularly mm-hmm. once you put it out on the internet. And it means you have to be really careful about the word choices you use, about the Definitely. Topics you discuss, and about the people with whom you partner. Because, you know, just like your grandfather told you when you were little, like, you know, a man gets judged by the people with whom he associates and by yep. the words that come out of his mouth. And once you realize that, you just become very deliberate in your speech and your speech patterns. One of the things, so I was editing some content of mine a couple of days ago, and my daughter was listening in, and she commented on both my speech pattern and on the other person's speech pattern. She said to me, "When you're talking, you never breathe," which I had not noticed, right? Because I'm more likely listening to somebody else's speech pattern. But it's just interesting the way you change the way you talk when you realize you're going to be recorded all the time.
I don't sound like this when I speak to other people.
You shouldn't.
No, like right now, there's a pattern that I'm using that I have when I'm in front of a microphone or in front of a camera. Right. I sound completely different, so most people can't actually recognize me, besides the fact that it's my voice. If it wasn't my voice, then they wouldn't catch it by my speech pattern.
Yeah, because you'll probably change your personality a little bit as well. Look, I wanted to ask you another thing too. We talked about physical equipment, but what do you use? Like, what kind of laptop do you use, or PC do you use for editing and recording? And what do you use then to edit the video and the audio from a software perspective?
I was on PC, the Asus ZenBook Pro 2016 model.
Got it.
Which slowly died down on me because of all the 4K footage that I was editing on. It was daily, right. So the poor thing had to keep up. And my company luckily sponsored a MacBook Pro, the 2018 one that was recently released for me. So I have that right now, and I've been loving the experience so far. The user 15, experience.
15-inch or 13-inch?
I use the 15-inch. I Got can't it, edit okay. on the 13-inch. It's not strong enough. It's not powerful enough for the footage that I work with.
And do you record, so I presume you save some stuff in the cloud, right? So I use Dropbox, I save stuff to Dropbox, but when I'm recording, I record directly to the SSD. I'm presuming you're doing the same thing.
I have both. So I have, I think, let me just try to remember. I have 2 terabytes on Google Drive, 2 terabytes on iCloud, and about 50 terabytes worth of hard drive space externally. It's a bunch External. Of like SSDs, yeah.
Huh. And what kind of array do you use? I use the word array. I shouldn't have, because it's a very specific term. But what kind of sort of enclosure do you use for your external hard drives?
I don't actually have one because I use enclosed hard drives. So they're all just the kind that you can go into Best Buy or Walmart and just go ahead and buy like the 1 terabyte ones that are already put in an enclosure.
And you have 50, I do you have to 50 invest of those?
In an actual array, like a RAID array, real soon, right. with a big tower style enclosure. But I just haven't found the need for it yet because I like being mobile when I edit. I don't want to stay in my room all day. I want to work out of a coffee shop, and that requires me to have storage that I can just bring with me everywhere, pretty much. So I've been fine with it. Other people are like telling me to back up onto a much bigger hard drive bay. Which I will soon, once I muster up the finances for it. It's kind of expensive.
It is expensive. What do you use for a mouse, right? So when you're editing, do you use the trackpad that's on the MacBook Pro, or do you have an external mouse as well?
I love the trackpad on the MacBook Pro, but my hands get stiff after a while. Okay. So I use a wireless Logitech G602. It's a gaming mouse. And I've found that gaming mice are the best for video editing because of the controls that you get on the side. They give you about maybe 6 controls for a standard gaming mouse. And I love that because I can map out different macro keys to my mouse that otherwise I wouldn't have access to. So I'm a big shortcut nerd.
Yeah.
And it's just efficiency wise helps so much.
And how about software?
Adobe Suite all the way. I don't use anything else. I'm a stickler for the Adobe Suite because of its compatibility from one to another. So I need this. I start off my editing process for videos in Premiere. I move over to Audition to clean up and master my audio, and then I move to After Effects for transitions and advanced color correction that I need to do, or effects and cool stuff. And those three are my bread and butter. I can't move over to the other softwares because of the integration between softwares. It's just something that Adobe has down, and I really can't ditch that.
Yeah, I don't. Is there anybody out there that actually competes with Adobe at the highest level, not just with the software itself, but with the integration that they've done for that entire creative suite?
Integration?
Like, does anybody use anything else?
Yes. Industry standard would be DaVinci Resolve because of its color grading prowess. You literally have Blackmagic is the owner of DaVinci. And Blackmagic makes these boards that you can, dedicated knobs that you can basically color correct cinema level footage with. You can get very minute with the details in the color. So you can be like 0.001% more orange to the edit. And it's a very specific editor thing to want to do. But people invest a lot of money into these editing bays, and DaVinci has the most integration in terms of pure color correction. And then Final Cut is a YouTuber's go-to because of how fast it works with Max. You cut down your editing time, I think, by like 90% if you're efficient enough. Yes, because of how quickly the export and the timeline review is. It's a dumbed down version of most editors because you don't have all of the power, but for most people, I think 99.99999% of people don't need the extra integration of Premiere and After Effects because they don't need those flashy transitions or whatever. They just cut, paste, slap on some music, create content, post.
So do you, for your stuff, in other words, not for the things that you're doing for your creative agency and for your part-time job, but for things that you do for yourself, do you also film and record outside of your home studio? In other words, just walking down the street or using external scenery to film as well?
I definitely vlog. It's the most embarrassing thing in the world that I still have yet to get over. Because I don't have a tiny camera to vlog on. I have this massive hulking 3-pound beast and a puffy microphone because I can't deal with crappy audio. So I have a big microphone and I need a tripod or a stabilizer for that. So I bring around a mini tripod. Putting that all together looks daunting and looks kind of odd. And I'm not Casey Neistat in terms of my fame level. So I can't justify bringing that everywhere without getting some weird stares. Now, I know people have told me that nobody actually cares beyond your 5 seconds of weirdness, but I still notice it and I still feel embarrassed. So it's still an ongoing struggle for me to point the camera at myself and just be like, hey, guys, Khalil here, back at it again with another vlog. I can't do that.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, I understand. There's this whole context, right, of people doing that, hey guys thing. I don't know. It really turns me off in a way.
I don't do that ever.
Ever. Neither do I, because who are these guys that people are talking to? And how do you know they're guys? And again, I don't want to be like in the politically correct spectrum, but like, how do you know they're not girls or ladies or dogs that are, I just don't understand this hey guys thing. It really annoys me in a way when people do it. And okay, if you want to, fair enough, go ahead, but it just seems really goofy. Like, you have no other way to start.
It's a filler, it's a crutch that people rely on because
I hate it.
It's like people beginning their sentences with the word so, or saying like over and over again, like I can't think of anything, like, you know, like
I have no idea like why anybody would do that.
And I focus on my speech pattern quite a bit. So when I record myself and I speak to the camera, I count the words that I use over and over again. And if I find that I'm frequently using something over and over again, and I'm repeating that phrase, that line, that word over and over again, I know that it's turning into my crutch and that I'm not diversifying my speech. This is it's a very intellectual, academic, and hoity-toity thing to do. And most people don't do this or need to do this, but it's something that I put onto myself. I really want to be away from the standard where people have the same lines over and over again, and they're putting themselves in that corner of having the same thing to say. It just diminishes their creativity.
Look, a limited vocabulary is the sign of a limited mind. And I think that it's really important, like you said, to listen to yourself speak, understand the word choices that you make. We talked earlier about how the words that come out of your mouth help define how people perceive you. It's very important. And if you want to be perceived as an intellectual or an intelligent person, you have to make sure that you're using a wide array of vocabulary. Otherwise, if you're repeating the same thing over and over again, it just gets stale and boring, and you sound kind of stupid in a way.
I hate that. And that's a big fear of mine, to sound dumb in front of the people I respect the most.
Yeah. So what else are you working on that's interesting?
I keep it to those things because
it's a lot.
I struggle. Actually, I'm currently struggling with spreading myself out too thin because I don't want to fail university and I don't want to be one of those dropouts. I have nothing against them, but that's not me. I love being in it and I don't want to fail. I love being graded is not something that a lot of people do like, but I kind of find exhilaration in getting my 85s and 90s. So managing a job, and it's not just a customer service job or a behind the McDonald's cashier job. It's something where I have to really put in time and effort into. So it is stretching me thin. So beyond what I do now, I've said no to quite a lot of things. I've said no to because I just can't do anything else.
Yeah, look, to be fair, you've taken on a lot of responsibility, and you made an interesting point as well, and that is you didn't take a job where it's just providing service to somebody, which means during the hours of like 7 o'clock at night until midnight, you do one thing, you go home, it's over. Like you lock the key, you leave the front door and you go home. That's not what you're doing. You're taking on a ton of responsibility. And that's why I asked you earlier how long it took you to do full production. I call it editing, but it's what you're doing is not editing. It's full production. You're cutting things into snippets as well. And you're creating 3 or 4 different kinds of content. That's a big responsibility that you do for yourself, but also when you're working at your part-time job at the creative agency, like you said, they're giving you 75 to 80% of the creative freedom, and they expect you to come back with something that meets their standards. If it doesn't, like it just doesn't. And that's a pretty big responsibility for a student. And then you're a student as well, right? So if you think about, you know, it's almost like you're a student athlete, but you're a student worker. It's a big deal, I think, what you're doing.
I like that you compare it to a student athlete because that would be the most one-to-one comparison that you could make, because student athletes are just like that. They're training constantly and they're finding time in their day to slot it in. And it's not just a 9-to-5 thing where they begin at 9 and they end at 5. They're constantly thinking about how to be better and better themselves while maintaining their academic average and maintaining a social life, balancing all of these things at once. And for me, I struggled to do that because of that responsibility that you mentioned. I realized this is that there are things that keep me up at night because of how much I care about them and how much I don't want to disappoint. And we brought this up in the last conversation.
We did, didn't we? I was going to say it's thematic for you. This whole concept of not wanting to disappoint either you or your family or your friends or your network is something that's really important
to you.
And now
it's led up and contributed to my professional experience. So I'm not a student athlete, but I'm a student professional.
Yeah, that was the term I was going to use. You took those words right out of my mouth. Student professional. That's exactly what it is.
And it's daunting, but I think I wouldn't be satisfied otherwise, because a student's workload, if you're in certain programs, it just won't cut it in terms of work, and you become idle and you become complacent, and that leads to laziness, and that leads to doing stupid things that your parents wouldn't be proud of. So I would much rather this right now, the position I'm in, than being idle and lazy.
Good for you. Look, I think that's another great way to end. And I really appreciate your time again today.
Of course.
You are awesome. Thanks, Khalil.
Thank you very much, Michael. So are you. We'll have to turn the tables soon and put you on the spot.
So that was the thing I was going to ask you last, and that is, when do I get to be on your show? Because I want to experience that whole situation where I'm not in your room, right? But you sit down. We've talked to each other a bunch of times now. We don't need to prep. You just get your list of questions, or you get your production sort of thing in order. And you can film it too, right? I've got a camera that I can use, and I want to see like how you take this from beginning to end and what the content ends up looking like, what the output is. So I'm happy to
That's
do it whenever you want.
I don't have a platform to put that in per se. My platform, What's Up Waterloo, is catered to. But that doesn't mean that I won't do it.